Earners, what's up? Y'all know I'm big on doing your research, sharing your research, and giving credit to where you found the research. But I always get asked the same question. Where do I start with the research? And the answer is easy. It's our sponsor, Yahoo Finance. Whether I'm tracking the daily movement of my favorite companies, doing technical analysis with their easy-to-use charting platform, or checking balance sheets, Yahoo Finance makes something very complex simplified. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or you're looking for extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. You could actually securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including your 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. With a community of over 90 million users each month, the real strength is helping you on your way to financial success. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, that's yahoofinance.com. You heard me, yahoofinance.com. Don't wait, don't hesitate. I use it. You should go over there and start using it now. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Earners, what's up? Look, today I want to talk to you about something that's been on my mind, a real weight on my shoulders. You know, we all have these moments, big or small, that just stick with us. When we don't talk about these things, then they can start to affect our lives in unexpected ways. That's why having a space to express these feelings is so important. I know firsthand the benefits of therapy. It's been transformative for my friends and family. Therapy can help you learn crucial skills like setting boundaries and developing coping strategies. It's not just about dealing with major events. It's also about enhancing your day-to-day life, allowing you to become the best version of yourself. So if you've been thinking about therapy, BetterHelp can be a great option for you. It's entirely online, which makes it super convenient and adaptable to your busy schedule. You start by filling out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. And you can even switch therapists at any time if you feel the need without any additional cost. So get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/EarnYourLeisure today to get 10% off your first month. Remember, that's BetterHelp, HELP.com/EarnYourLeisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
If I'm going to buy a home, I want a home. I don't want to live and have to deal with neighbors.
But you're going to have to deal with a mortgage.
Yeah.
You either deal with neighbors or you deal with a mortgage. And FHA is only 1 year living requirement, right? So a lot of people, the single family dream has been pushed to folks, but the American dream is just rock people to sleep. It's actually the American nightmare. Everything they tell you to do in the American dream is to rock you to sleep. Everything they tell you to do, go to college. Who gets paid off that student loan interest? The government. They say, go get a high paying job. Who gets paid, takes their money off the top? The government. Then they say, go get a single family home. Who do you have to pay property taxes to? The government. Everything they told you to do in the American dream was so that they could get paid.
My graduates from my school being Forbes, bag drop.
Bag drop.
A mic drop. Bag drop.
Bag drop.
All right, guys, welcome back. EYL, this is, you know, we've been on the road for a very long period of time. So this is the first time in a while that we're actually shooting an episode.
Feel good to be home.
Yeah, for sure. So this is one of these episodes that right up our alley as far as like how we started with information. Like we pick a topic and then we just get an expert in the field and give a lot of gems and information that's kind of been our blueprint since the beginning. And we haven't done a real estate episode in a long time.
Yeah, we've been relegated to our boy MG.
Yeah.
Rightfully so.
Nah, shout out to Matt. He's killing the game. Make sure you check out Rants and Gems podcast on EYL Network. Top real estate podcast in the game.
If we don't say so ourselves.
Yeah, for sure. But you know, we talk about stocks all the time, obviously, Market Mondays. But once again, you know, we haven't spoken about real estate in a while. And real estate is the cornerstone one of the cornerstones for building wealth in this country and all over the world. So I say that to say, thought it would be a perfect time to get back on the real estate side of things.
We got a guy.
So Julian Gordon, I'm sure you're already familiar with him because he's been killing the game for a while online, social media. He's actually been at InvestFest. He was at InvestFest.
Yeah, he wasn't just at InvestFest. He had a moment. Everybody stand up right now.
That was classic.
That was a moment. That was a classic moment.
So if he was at InvestFest, you saw that. And then he's been on with the family, Rants and Gems and Ash Cash. So Julian is interesting because, you know, a lot of people talk about real estate, but everybody has different niches. So his thing is multifamily homes.
Yeah, yeah. Mr. Multifamily himself.
Yes, yes. So
Yes, sir.
So he actually is the head of the multifamily movement. So he has a program, and I believe his students, he has over 4,000 students, and they have a total of 262 closings, right, of multifamily homes. 140 closings this year. Matt always says, because I know Matt does a lot of financing. He was like, yo, these people in this group is crazy. Like, they hit me they hit me every day nonstop. But that's a good thing, because that means they're out hunting for deals. They're hungry. So what he does is he teaches people about not just how to buy real estate, but specifically multifamily homes. And multifamily homes is something that is extremely important, especially like where we live in the Northeast, but really different pockets all over the country. And MG has spoke about multifamily homes before. Actually, when he first came on the podcast, that was his whole strategy as far as, you know, get a multifamily and have positive cash flow and things of that nature. So we're going to have a really interesting, dope conversation about real estate, multifamily homes, and I'm sure it'll be a lot of gems dropped. So first and foremost, thank you for joining us, brother. Appreciate
it. Glad to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Did we miss the amount of funds that have been generated from the students? 62 million, something.
Yeah,
like that?
It's about 62 million. If you if on average each property is about 300,000, yeah, we up there. So actually 75. Since that number, I need to update that number. We're at 75 million in real estate acquired in 2 years.
Don't let that go over your
Please
head.
Please don't.
Yeah.
So, all right, let's get into this. I want to get into details, nitty gritty. But before I start, I just want to give an overview of how did you get to this point, because I actually just found out something that you was in one of the most prestigious business schools. You graduated from one of the most prestigious business schools of all, Stanford University. So I would assume that originally you was on like a business path, maybe even tech path, because a lot of people go to Stanford that. So what made you get into real estate?
Yeah, so I went into business school because I knew I wanted to be an entrepreneur. But when you look at business school and what actually comes out of it, you see a lot of people actually escaping the corporate plantation, going to business school, and then ending it back up on the corporate plantation at a higher pay. And so it wasn't actually training entrepreneurs. Stanford happened to be the most entrepreneurial business school out there. So that's why I chose Stanford. But everything that I've learned about business that has allowed me to create the wealth that I have today didn't come from Stanford. It didn't come from the marketing class there. It didn't come from the finance class there. It came through actually reinvesting back into my own education and my own mind through coaches, consultants, and things of that nature after. But my real estate journey actually starts with my mom. She was a doctor anesthesiologist, and she had a good paying job. She was following the American dream, and she ended up with a mental health issue. Not anything to her fault whatsoever. And that mental health issue caused her to lose her license. And once the one single income stream evaporated, then she couldn't pay the mortgage on the home that we had in Oakland. That home today is worth $1.8 million. And so when I saw somebody who did everything that they were supposed to do actually lose it all, because they were relying on one stream of income, even though it was a high stream of income, that made me choose a different path. And so in college, I read Rich Dad Poor Dad, like many people did. And I knew immediately, not only from my own mom's story, but from that book, that my first property was not going to be a single family home, that it'd be a multifamily home. And so I purchased my first multifamily home in Brooklyn. It was a triplex, 2013. And the moment I went from paying expensive rent in Brooklyn to being paid expensive rent in Brooklyn, game was over. And so, you know, as I started trying to go deeper into the game, buying another property in Brooklyn was challenging because I use the FHA for that first property, but the next one will require 25% down. And when you have properties that are $1 million, 25% down is going to be a quarter million. So I decided to scale my portfolio by investing outside of Brooklyn. And that's how I found the New Orleans market. And from there, I just doubled down and continued to scale my portfolio, eventually moving down to New Orleans and things of that nature. So yeah,
I was wondering, because like a lot of people will start in real estate, they don't have the funding. So FHA was the route you did for your first triplex?
Correct. So 3.5% down. At that time, the property was like $700,000. So it wasn't major money. I did have to save. I did have to discipline myself in order to save that. But I made that payment. And then from there, I haven't had a housing expense since May of 2013.
How many houses do you own now?
I have 40 units, 16 buildings, 40 units, but that's just my personal portfolio.
So 40 doors, right?
Yeah, 40 doors.
Yeah, I put a post up, I think, earlier, like 100 doors, 100, 1,000 shares.
That's our new club.
Yeah, 1,000 shares, 100 doors. That's something that, so you're only halfway there.
Yeah, halfway there. Yeah. And then you add in my portion of the other funds. I'm at probably around 80 when you add in those as well. We just closed on a 36 unit in Scotlandville in Baton Rouge. So, yeah, so continuing to scale up.
Congratulations.
Appreciate that.
All right, so let's get into some questions. So the biggest thing that stops people from buying real estate is money.
Yeah.
You know, well, we'll talk about mindset also, but money is definitely a big thing, and financing. But there are different programs, especially, you know, we're talking about multifamily homes. So
yeah,
I want to talk about a few. One that we have not covered yet, which is NACA.
Yeah.
Can you talk about NACA a little bit?
Man, NACA is amazing. NACA is amazing, but it's two sides of the coin. You'll hear people say NACA is amazing, those who have closed, and then you'll hear other people say NACA is not amazing, right? So NACA is really, really powerful because it's 0% down. No closing costs, no points or fees, et cetera, and extremely low interest rates. And the key to winning at NACA is making sure that your counselor is solid. If your counselor is not solid, then it's going to be a difficult journey for you. And then it's also your persistence. You have to stay on that person. You actually have to lead your counselor to get to the finish line. So if you're just going to sit back and think that some program is literally going to give you a home for nothing and you don't actually put in any effort, it's going to be a hard road for you. So I've had many people close through my program. See, NACA does the financing, but they don't teach you how to find the deal or how to finalize the deal. Financing is actually the easiest part of the real estate game when you know about programs like NACA or FHA. So NACA actually is not a program for poor people. So that's actually what keeps half the people out, is because they have a perception that it's for people who have a low income, and it's not. What's powerful about it and why people with low income are able to go through the program is because there's no credit score consideration. And that's huge for a lot of people.
No closing costs.
No points or fees.
No points or fees. No down payment. No credit.
And no credit. So here's how they verify you. So basically, they take whatever you've been paying in rent plus whatever you're able to prove that you can save over a 3-month period. So if you're paying $1,200 a month in rent on time consistently, right, and you're able to show them that you're able to save an additional $300 a month on top of that, then they'll approve you for a mortgage of $1,500.
Gotcha.
So that's how they verify your ability to afford the real estate. And so NACA has two tiers of people. They have priority and non-priority. So priority is anyone who is making 80% or less of the area's AMI. So AMI is the area's median income. Mm-hmm. So those people are able to get interest rates as low as 2%. 2%. That's basically free money when you account for inflation being 6%, right? So, and then non-priority members who have higher incomes start at 3%. But then what NACA actually tells you to do is that, since you're no longer paying a down payment, why don't you buy down these points, right? And so a point is a percentage of your mortgage. So if you have a mortgage of $300,000, you could pay $3,000, 1% of that, and actually buy down your interest rate. And they have tiers where their interest rates, when you pay $3,000 in advance, the bank is taking that $3,000 in advance, then your interest rate is going down by probably like 0.125, right? Mm-hmm. So you're a quarter, not an eighth of a point every time you contribute $3,000. So rather than putting that towards a down payment, because there is none, you're actually buying down points. So you'll see people in NACA have interest rates that are less than 1%. And so when you look at that over a 30-year period, a decrease in interest rate by 1% on a $300,000 mortgage, that's going to save you $60,000 over the life of that loan.
Is there a limit that you can put into, like, to the point where you're putting $3,000 to a point where it is absolutely 0.25. 0.4 is the lowest you can go?
I think it's 0.25. A quarter of a percent is the lowest you can go with NACA as a priority.
So who qualifies for this? Is anybody eligible to qualify for NACA loans?
Anybody.
Wow.
Anybody. No income restriction.
It's a government program, right?
No, it's actually a nonprofit.
Nonprofit.
It's a nonprofit that organized against the banks initially when all the predatory lending happened, and somehow they organized against the banks and then got the banks to offer this amazing financing for people to kind of rectify the guilt that they had accumulated through all the predatory lending that they had done.
But I know some of the downside is like people saying like it takes a long time and it's like tedious process, right?
Yeah. So the best way to approach NACA is actually to do your savings and actually have all your documentation in advance. So if I've been able to prove that I've been saving this particular amount in advance of actually applying for the program and my appointment, then I hit the ground running. But if I start without any financial discipline in advance and then have to go through the process of demonstrating that I can save this amount of money for this particular mortgage, that's going to take me an additional amount of time in order to qualify or get pre-approved by them. So it's just coming to the table with your financial house in order first, and that accelerates the process for folks.
How many times can you actually use a NACA loan? Like if I do it and I pay off a home in, let's say, 10 years, am I eligible to do it again, or can I have them running simultaneously? How does it work?
No, NACA expects you to live in the home for the life of the loan, but that is a minimum of 5-year living requirement. So FHA is only a 1-year living requirement. Mm-hmm. NACA is a 5-year, but they actually desire you to live in that home for the life of the loan. So NACA is not a play where you can run several times. FHA, there are some hidden ways, some secret ways to use FHA twice.
We've heard.
Yeah, to use FHA twice, but NACA likely not. And so if you want to scale your portfolio beyond NACA after you use NACA, you're actually going to have to refinance once you're out of this amazing interest rate, right, to go conventional to free you up to be able to go use one of the other loan programs or go conventional and scale your portfolio up. So
you can refinance after 5 years?
Yeah, okay. After 5 years. Gotcha. They actually hold a second lien position on you for that 5 years to make sure that you stay in the property and you're not house hacking through them. Yeah. It's 5 years. But in order to refinance, you're going to need your home to be at 80% loan to value. Now, you put 0% down. So you either have to force that appreciation or you have to have bought so right that it has appreciated to that extent over that period of time, over that 5-year period.
Yeah, and NACA is a great place. NACA, if anybody, that's how it's spelled. And I think they have like seminars and stuff like that.
All the time.
Yeah, so you can actually like just Google in your area. And like you said, you have a counselor. Like if you get assigned to somebody who's working with you.
Yeah.
And they kind of help you through the process and getting your documentation and everything in order. And, you know, it's definitely beneficial for I've known some people that definitely have been able to purchase home through the NACA program.
Yeah, definitely. So Gloria, she purchased a triplex in Brooklyn, in Philadelphia recently. And all she had to come out of pocket to acquire a triplex in Philadelphia was title fees. Mm. Title fees are a pair of Jordans. She got a triplex in Philadelphia for a pair of Jordans or a round trip flight from New York to Los Angeles. Like anybody can do that, but you have to know that it's there and you have to be persistent and you have to be financially disciplined to be able to get qualified through them.
Ernest, what's going on? This Black History Month, McDonald's is kicking off Future 22, a campaign celebrating 22 Gen Z leaders across the country who are making an impact on their communities right now. This generation may have the largest influx of young leaders since the Civil Rights Movement. They're starting their own organizations, finding ways to empower youth and culture, standing up and speaking out. McDonald's is showcasing their efforts and the impact they're having on the world. Ever heard of Anaya Dillard? She's an 18-year-old activist who started the Next Gen Come Up, a nonprofit that encourages activism and community service. McDonald's is sharing stories of the Future 22 leaders like Anaya and more on their Instagram @WeAreGolden.
Let's talk about another financing program we spoke about before, but once again, it was a while ago since the last time we spoke about it. FHA loan.
Yeah.
So I think the FHA loan is beneficial because, correct me if I'm wrong, you're able to put like 3.5% down?
Correct.
So talk about FHA for anybody that's not familiar with FHA.
Yeah, so FHA is a government program, and 3.5% down on a $300,000 duplex, right, is only $10,500. So what other business can you buy for $10,500 that is valued at $300,000 get financed for it within like 45 days, right, with minimal experience? What other business, and they have it immediately cash flowing? There's no other business that you can buy for $300,000 like that quickly. And so this is why FHA is so powerful. So FHA typically requires about a 680 credit score to get qualified. It actually can go down, but if your credit score is below 680, then your interest rate or your down payment are going to increase on FHA. There are FHA guidelines. These are federal guidelines, but lenders can stack on their own lending guidelines on top of it. So just because FHA says that the credit score minimum is 680, other lenders may say, no, we actually need a 720 in order to qualify you for that. So they can stack on their own guidelines to FHA. But FHA is really powerful. That's how I acquired my triplex in Brooklyn with the FHA loan. And the downside of FHA that people don't tell you is the PMI. The private mortgage insurance. NACA doesn't have private mortgage insurance. And so private mortgage insurance means that their banks are literally, the government is actually protecting the banks. Like, they've already bailed out the banks. I don't know why the banks need protection, but they're protecting the banks. And so there's this additional private mortgage insurance. So it could be an additional 1% fee. So again, if your loan is $300,000, 1% is $3,000 per year. You divide that by 12 months. And now you're paying an additional $250 per month on your mortgage payment for this private mortgage insurance. And now that PMI is actually permanent. And it's permanent until you refinance out.
Oh, it doesn't go away after 20%?
It used to go away after 20%. It is now permanent until you refinance out.
So you said if the credit score wasn't great, that the interest rate can go up from 3.5, right?
The down payment is 3.5. The interest rate is going to depend on a variety of things.
Now, depending on if you get a single family or a multifamily, with those factors as well that can change the interest rate of the property or of the loan?
No. So the interest rate is based on, so for when I talk multifamily, yeah. I'm talking about two family, three family, or four family homes. These are also known as duplexes, triplexes, or fourplexes. Yeah. So once you get to five units or more, that's a commercial loan and that's a different lending process, right? That's right, a different lender, different terms, 20-year amortization, you're having an ARM, your interest rate's gonna be higher, et cetera. So interest rate is not dependent on whether it's a duplex, triplex, or fourplex. The interest rate is based on your financial profile.
Got it. So that PMI, is that just for the FHA or is that, because I know like if you just put less than 20% on any type of mortgage, you correct. Have to have PMI, but until you get to 20%.
Conventional is PMI too if it's less than 20%.
That's the same thing?
Correct.
All right,
correct.
So just for the FHA, it stays on for the lifetime?
It stays on until you refinance out. So if I see that I went FHA, I have PMI, that's $250 additional per month, but my home is appreciated. I bought right in a gentrifying neighborhood and I believe that I'm at 80% loan to value. I'm going to go run the numbers, get an appraisal and actually refinance out of that PMI. And that's $250 back in my pocket. That's a car note, that's a cell phone bill, that's groceries for folks. So, yeah, but that's the key to buying right. If you don't buy right, then you have to literally just sit and wait and continue to cough up this extra $250 a month that is just literally there to protect the banks.
So PMI exists on a conventional if it's not 20% down.
Correct.
What if I'm doing it's not my primary residence, it's now an investment property. Does PMI exist on that? And I think it's like 25% down?
It's 25% down on a purely investment property. So yeah, you're already
period.
Above.
You have to. You have to do
correct.
It.
Correct. So there's no PMI.
Got you.
Yeah.
203K loan.
Mm-hmm.
That, can you talk about that?
Yeah. So 203K loan, FHA, same thing. But here's how it works. So, they're going to give me my 3.5% down payment is going to be on the acquisition price plus the actual rehab. So if my acquisition price is 200 and the rehab is 100, then my down payment is still going to be 10,500. What's powerful about the 203K loan is that you're going to get a 203K consultant who guides you through some of the rehab process, and you're likely going to step into built-in equity because you took something that was run down. You put in $100,000 to it. It's now like a brand new home. So even though you have $300,000 in,
you build equity.
So now you're stepping into equity right out the gates. And that's one of the keys to buying right. So we don't just want people to go out there and buy real estate, just like we don't want people to just go out there and buy stocks just because we said so. We want you to buy right. And so buying right is three criteria. First criteria is that you're stepping into built-in equity, meaning that your appraised price is actually higher than your purchase price. So you're stepping in equity right out the gates. You won out the gates because you have equity. The second criteria is that in multifamily, it is at least a 12% cash on cash return, right? Using the rule of 72, 72 divided by 12 means that your money's doubling every 6 years. The money that you have in the property is doubling every 6 years. And then the third criteria for buying right is that there's definite appreciation potential. And definite appreciation potential means that I've identified 33 signs of gentrification. And definite appreciation potential means that you bought on the right side of the wave. And so when I bought on Fulton and Utica in Brooklyn, there was about 10 to 15 signs of gentrification there, right? And that was called do or die Bed-Stuy at the time when no I purchased longer, it. No longer, right? Because I saw it coming from Dumbo. Correct. It was coming from, I saw the wave coming from Dumbo, right? To Fort Greene, Stuyvesant Heights, to Bed-Stuy. So I saw the wave. So I bought right here. I bought right here when the wave was here, and I've been able to ride that wave all the way through East New York. Yeah. So that's definite appreciation potential, because now that neighborhood has 30 of the 33 signs of gentrification. So every time a new sign is added, the equity is going up.
All right, we gotta go there. We have to go there. So there's 33 signs of gentrification.
Yes, sir.
Like, we like to see it. Like I used to say, like, yo, if you see a Starbucks, you see Chipotle, you see these Fortune 500 companies, you see new construction, you see new building. What are some of the signs that you're looking for in that list of signs of gentrification?
Our favorite one is a white girl running at 9 p.m. through the what used to be known as the hood with check. Her earpods on and the Lululemon. You good to go.
Check.
You good to go. Okay.
She gotta be wearing Lululemon.
Gotta be Lululemon.
Can't be Ivy Park.
Oh no, can't be Ivy Park. No, she's still a little too hood. Gotta be Lululemon, and that's just a telltale sign. Of course, you're gonna start to see dumpsters, coffee shops, cafes, yoga studios, a dog grooming. You're gonna see bike lanes, things of that nature. These are some of them.
Bike lanes is heavy.
Yeah, they're gonna start to call graffiti art. Right. All of a sudden you see neighborhood name changes and things of that nature. So these are some of the key signs of gentrification. And you have to train your eyes to be able to observe them and watch them happening, because they're happening. You just have to train your eyes.
The bike lanes is heavy.
Yeah.
All through Harlem. Once you saw those city bike things, you know
it's coming. Yeah.
But even like the Beltline in Atlanta, similar mm-hmm. type of situation.
It's the same pattern playing out. So I saw the same pattern in Oakland, right? I saw it in West Oakland and East Oakland. Then I saw the same pattern in Inglewood when I was down in LA. And then I saw the same pattern here. Saw the same pattern. It's the same pattern playing out. So it's just pattern recognition at the end of the day. And so if you're able to see the patterns, then you're able to get ahead of them and benefit from it.
So here's a big one that everybody asks, because a lot of our New York is our biggest market, followed by Atlanta, Los Angeles, Oakland, California. So we have listeners all over the world, but a lot of people are in these major markets. Mm-hmm. And the common denominator is that real estate is expensive, extremely high. So a lot of people get discouraged. They're like, all right, this might work for, you know, if you're in the middle of America, but in Brooklyn, in Harlem, like in, you know, LA, it's not working. I don't have enough money to buy real estate.
Not gonna happen.
So this is something that I think is gonna be extremely beneficial. How to win and beat out cash buyers and hedge funds in expensive markets like New York and Los Angeles.
Yeah, you got to know what you're doing. You're playing against heavy hitters, and so you have to elevate your game. If you think you're just going to walk into the real estate market and be able to play with the big boys and not understand what you're doing, you're going to lose every time. So I tell people all the time, you see a property on Trulia and Zillow, first and foremost, that's not where I go to find properties. All of my properties I find is off-market deals. So I'm not competing with people, because once a property hits one of those websites, there's a 30% premium. Because now demand is increasing, because everybody in the world is seeing that property. That's getting emailed out to everyone, right? So I'm looking for off-market deals. And how do you find off-market deals? You find them through relationships, through human beings. So my real estate Rolodex in New Orleans is about 66 people, multiple agents. Okay, that's the gym. I don't just have one agent. Like a lot of people think you just get one agent and let them go do all the work. No, I have multiple agents. Why would I restrict my search to one single agent? Now, if that agent happens to be the best in the city at identifying multifamily properties, I'll sign an exclusive agreement with them. But otherwise, whoever brings me the deal is who's going to get the commission and get paid. Mm. I have contractors. I have lenders. I have other property owners. I have friends and family who are looking out for me. Why would a contractor be looking out for me? Because if they find a deal and bring it to me, who's going to get the work? When I need to rehab that property, the contractor is, right? So
what's that process like? Because a lot of times people fall into that, you know what, everything was great, I can't find a good contractor. What's the process of finding a good one, keeping a good one, building relationships with them?
Yeah, it's word of mouth and pulling up on people on site. So when you see a contractor outside of a house, You gotta pull up. You gotta see their work. Otherwise, you're just guessing off of some Yelp reviews or something like that, and all of those can be manipulated. Mm. If I actually see your work and I see that you started here about Wednesday and you were out the door by Monday of next week for a bathroom, then I know you are efficient and good at what you do. And it's got to be word of mouth. Like, my real estate Rolodex has been built by word of mouth and then pulling up people on site and testing them out. So you might test them out on painting one bedroom before you test them out on painting the entire house that you have, right? Mm-hmm. And see what the quality of work is at that level. But back to the question at hand. So off-market deals. The other thing is that the only thing that beats a cash offer is a fast offer. So you have to be confident about what you're doing. And when it comes to evaluating multifamily real estate, there's actually 23 numbers that you need to know. When you're buying a single family home, is how much do we get approved for, right? 400,000. How much is the home? 380. Do we like it? Yes or no? Three factors. When you're buying multifamily real estate, there's 23 numbers that you have to know to evaluate a deal. And if you leave out one single number, you can literally step into a bad deal that will set you back for 5 to 10 years. So you have to know how to run those numbers. If you are on Trulia and Zillow and you're over here hearting stuff and bookmarking stuff, I know you're not ready to play this game, because when you are hearting something on Tuesday, right, and putting it in your favorites folder, and you're talking about, I'm going to come back to it on Saturday. What's the two words under the listing every time you come back to it on Saturday? Pending, under contract, because you didn't know how to play the game. Somebody else saw the deal and moved on it. So you have to be able to make those decisions confidently. And it's all based on numbers. Multifamily real estate is purely based on economics, not on emotions. So I don't make emotional decisions when it comes to multifamily real estate. For instance, the property that I bought in Oakland, I was living here in Brooklyn. I ran the numbers and my offer was in within 1 hour of the listing being up. Within 1 hour. Right? No hesitation whatsoever. I didn't have to see the property. I've actually never set foot inside of this property. I bought that property for $480,000 in 27 months. We got it reappraised 27 months later. It's worth $710,000. And I've never set foot inside of it. So for those who are in expensive markets, your money does not have to work in the same city as you do. Some people have bought Amazon stock and never been to Seattle. You bought Nike stock and never been to Oregon. Your money does not have to work in the same city as you do. So when you understand how to run the numbers and you know certain neighborhoods and you have a great agent on the ground in that market, you're not limited to where you are. A lot of people think, oh, real estate, it has to be where I'm living. And that's cool. Typically, I tell people, here's the four markets that you should invest in. And a lot of people think they're cities. No. One, try to invest where you live. Okay. If that doesn't work because it's too expensive or something like that, two, invest where you're from, because you know what was happening there when you're growing up. You're able to see the patterns and the trends. That's why I invested in Oakland, right? Then three, invest where you want to be a contribution. So for me, that was New Orleans. I want to be a contribution to that culture. And then four, invest wherever you can make money. I've never invested purely in a place because of making money. So when it comes to real estate being expensive where I am, let's just calculate how expensive you paying rent is for the next 5, 10, 15 years, right? If your rent in New York is $2,000, that's $24,000. That's an L. That's a 24K L. And if we multiply that by 10 years, that's $250,000. That's $240,000, 10 years. So what's actually more expensive? So in an expensive market, like typically we're looking for a 12% cash on cash return, right? But in a market like New York, you might have to settle for the fact that the money that's coming out of my pocket is less than what I'm paying in rent. So if I'm negative $2,000 in rent in New York, mm-hmm. and I'm able to find a multifamily that only reduces my housing expense to $500, that's actually a win in an expensive market. Is it the ideal 12% cash on cash return when my property is now paying me? No, but it's actually changing my cash flow of my family because now I'm up $1,500 a month because of this multifamily. So these are some of the keys: being willing to invest from a distance, reevaluating the numbers and comparing it to how expensive rent is, because that's gonna be there. Unless you change something, rent is going to continue to be there. There's only three ways to get rid of your housing expense forever. That is one, live in a tent; two, go to jail; or three, buy multifamily real estate.
So you talk about 23 numbers to know. What are some of the numbers that they should know?
So you have to know the rents, obviously, right? Just because a seller gives you rent roll doesn't mean that those are the actual rents. You need to know what the actual rents are. You need leases. You need to verify those rents.
Talk about that, because that's something that people don't fully appreciate. Like, yeah, you have to actually know what's actually happening with the property.
Yeah.
Not 100%. What they're just telling you is happening.
Yeah, you have to do due diligence. So I'm asking for leases, but even leases don't tell me if that tenant is actually paying on time. Mm-hmm. So I need to actually see that amount of money hitting the account between the first and the fifth for all four units that I'm about to purchase. I'm buying a business.
Right.
I'm buying a business. And if we were going to buy a laundromat or something like that, we are going to actually need to see the cash flow. Now, because most owners are just individuals, some of them don't have good accounting around the actual cash flow of the property, but you have to know what you're getting into, especially in this market where you have COVID restrictions and you can't evict people, etc. You got to actually know those things. And so I'm asking for bank statements. I don't need to see your entire bank statement, cross everything out, but I need to see when that money actually hit the account, right? But then we use other online tools like Rentometer to actually identify how much should this particular unit be getting, right? And so if I see that a seller has not increased rents for 10 years and the rents are actually at $1,000, but I run the numbers over here and look at the standard deviation, because that's what a Rentometer does, and I see that that could actually be commanding $1,300 a month, then I might have found some hidden value in a particular property. Now, as an ethical investor, I'm not interested in displacing people. So I'm not like some of these other real estate folks who say, yeah, just come and buy the property and just kick the people out. No, as ethical investors, we put people before profit. We put people before profit. We want our people to stay in our communities. But what's crazy is that a good investor actually has to increase rents every single year. And that was a hard awakening for me. And here's why. If I'm a owner in Oakland and I don't increase rents just because I want to be nice to my tenants, right? Then when I want to sell my property at $800,000, a property that I got 15 years ago for $300,000, the rents will not justify that to a seller, and therefore I will be stuck in that property and never be able to get it off. So I'll literally not be able to ever get liquid or release that property because the rents don't justify it. And so we increase rents according to the CPI in that market. So if the CPI in Oakland went up 3% that year, then we're going to increase rents by 3%. Because guess what? My other expenses are going to go up by 3%. My contractors are going to go up. My utilities are going to go up. My garden is going to go up. And so in order to provide
taxes
are going up. So in order to still provide you with the quality housing that I desire to provide for you, yeah, I have to be able to meet that. If I think just by being nice, right, and keeping your rent where it is, then ultimately I might not have enough money to fix that roof leak because I didn't increase rents, but all my other expenses went up during that period of time.
It's true.
Yeah, so this is really key. So even as an ethical investor, we have to increase rents, but we don't increase rents in such a way where it's going to be from 1,000 to 1,300 just like that, or else you got to get out. That's not how we treat people.
So you said this is key because you know all the numbers, and then something like Corona happens,
yeah,
and then you have a rental moratorium, and it's like, all right, well, people don't have to pay rent. So how do you handle a situation like that? I know you have a lot of doors. How does that work?
Yeah, so half of my portfolio is Section 8. So that's guaranteed income, right? Whether the economy's up or down. Yeah, whether the economy's up or down, I'm straight. And yeah, then the other key is you have to actually screen your tenants. So my market rate tenants, teachers, nurses, people like that whose income is not going to fluctuate based on a market. Like in New Orleans, I typically won't hire somebody who's in hospitality, right? Because especially in this COVID environment, that hotel shuts down or flights are canceled, things of that nature. Now their income is fluctuating. Therefore, that means my income is going to fluctuate. Mm-hmm. So you have to be very mindful about who you actually attract. So some of those other numbers include your property management, right? Includes the gardening. Like if I look at a property online and I see that it has no grass or a lot of grass, I'm going to put aside a $80 budget a month for a gardener if it has grass, because that has to be upkept. There are literally cities that'll give you tickets for not upkeeping your yard, right? I have to know my CapEx. CapEx is my capital expenditures. Those are about 10% of rents. So if rents are $4,000, I'm going to set aside $400 a month in a separate account for roof, foundation, electrical, plumbing, and things of that nature, right? And HVAC. I'm going to set aside money for those things that I know will come. They might not be immediate right now. I may not need a new roof right now, but I need to set aside a portion of rents for that. Repair reserve, like sink leaks or a hole in the wall or rodents or something like that. I'm going to set aside 5% for that. I got to know my interest rate, right? I got to know my down payment. I got to know my PMI. So all of these numbers factor into seeing if this property is actually going to cash flow at the level that you desire. And again, you leave out one number, especially a number like tax. Mm. you think you're buying a cash flowing property, then you see that your taxes in New York are $8,000 a year, and you realize that you're negative, that you went backwards. And the key thing about tax and calculating taxes when you're running your numbers is that the tax assessment is usually going to be based on the purchase price that the previous owner purchased the property at, right? And their taxes are going to be based on that. But once you purchase it at two times or three times what they purchased it at, because they were sitting on it for 20 years, yeah, it's going to get reassessed, and your taxes may double or triple accordingly. So if you were running your numbers based on their taxes, you think your property is cash flowing, but then when it gets reassessed a year later after you've owned it, you realize that you're actually in the negative because you didn't account for the fact that it was going to get reassessed at the purchase price that you bought it for.
So you said half of your properties are like Section 8 tenants?
Yes.
Can you talk about that? We haven't talked about that on the program yet. Talk about Section 8, because I know obviously it has a lot of, you know, stigma attached to it, but it's actually a lot of positive as far for being a landlord, right?
100%. I don't know where the stigma came from. I think it was in Living Color. I think it might have been some of Living Color skit or Martin or something like that, yeah, talking about Section 8 tenants, but you actually get to still screen your Section 8 tenant. Somebody, just because somebody shows up with a voucher, you don't have to say, oh, you get to move in. You still have to screen them. So I'm literally going to screen my Section 8 tenant just like I would screen a market rate tenant. And I'm looking at how she treats her kids. I'm looking at how she keeps herself, right? I'm looking at language, tone, patterns, and things of that nature. I'm looking at the application, if the instructions were followed and things of that nature. So I'm literally screening my Section 8 tenants. And my Section 8 tenants, I'll be honest with you, they all of mine have been good people who fell on hard times. So I had people who got displaced by Katrina. I had people who lost a husband, things of that nature. And they just experienced something that knocked them off their feet. And they're trying to get back on their feet. And now I get to be a support mechanism, provide them quality, affordable housing so that they don't have to worry about that piece by living in a neighborhood that is not actually conducive for their kids to grow up in. So I love my Section 8 tenants. They love me. And on top of that, they typically don't leave unless family size expands.
So the Section 8, let's stay on this for a minute. So the Section 8, people, I think that Section 8, they automatically assume projects, housing projects, but you can have Section 8 and live in a home.
Yeah, 100%.
You don't have to live. Mm. I think that's a common misconception also. Mm.
Correct.
The Section 8 in luxury buildings.
Well, that's different. That's not Section 8. I think that's like subsidized type of housing. rent control. Mm-hmm. It's okay. A little different. But so Section 8 is provided by the government.
Correct.
You have to be, you know, under a threshold of, think of like poverty level, yep, probably, mm-hmm, right? And then they'll give you like a voucher. Let's say it's like $1,500 or $1,000, whatever. And then you can use that and you can live in a house.
100%.
Right?
Just like that. Yeah. So the only issue with Section 8 is that the inspections. So they are in New Orleans in particular. The inspections, they can come and they're sticklers about windows, they're sticklers about doors, they're sticklers about where the fire alarms are and everything like that. So if you want to avoid any delays in getting your first check, you kind of want to start to learn what they actually look for so that when they actually do come and do the inspection, that you're ready to go and the transfer can happen.
And the government pays you, so you don't have to worry about.
Yeah, government pays me.
What about rent increase? Does that
affect? Oh, the Section 8 program. So in my property in Oakland and my properties in Brooklyn, actually all my properties have Section 8, and they're equivalent to market rate, and I don't have to worry. It's guaranteed.
So when you raise the rent,
I don't raise the rent. They have their own payment standards, and their payment standards have been competitive with market rate.
Oh, so they,
the government.
Yeah, the government.
So they'll say this year, this is the payment for this year.
For a 2-bedroom in New Orleans.
Okay, and yep, and it's competitive to the market.
100%.
What's the process? So like when everything's going good, and you said ethical investors, and we've screened our tenants. But what happens when something goes bad and it's somebody that, you know what, we need to get them out of the property? What's the process like to evict somebody that's in a Section 8 unit?
you just have to document what occurred and make sure you get that information, have evidence to present to the counselor. I mean, there's other people who, other landlords who are desiring Section 8 tenants. If you want them, you can have them, but you just have to document the process. It's same with any eviction. You got to go through the same thing. And I've only had to do two evictions in my entire experience because I screen right. And so I haven't had to have that experience, but it's the same thing. And you want to know the, for Section 8, I would go through the Section 8 office, but for eviction, it's really key for anybody buying multifamily. You need to know what the eviction process is in your city. You never want to use it, but you need to know how it actually works and how it operates, how quickly it can happen. So in New York, it could take you 6 months.
Forever. It could take a year.
Yeah.
Atlanta? 2 years.
Yeah. 10 days.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was what makes it a tenant-friendly or a landlord-friendly state. And you need to know that process because it may happen to you. And that would, 6 months or a year would significantly affect your cash flow. And for some people, their ability to actually afford that property. Right. So
yeah. How do you get listed for Section 8? You just go on like the government's website and fill out?
I've never been on Section 8, so I don't
know. No, I'm saying for a landlord. Yeah, like, how does landlord get a property listed?
I go straight to the Section 8 office and say, I would like to create an account. You'll put your first listing up there, just like you were putting it up on apartments.com. No different. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to ask for your articles of incorporation. They're going to ask for your voided check, et cetera, so that they can wire you the money on the first of the month. That money comes like clockwork.
That's clockwork. Like I said, I mean, from a landlord standpoint, it's the government paying you. So
yeah.
You don't have to worry about it.
Guaranteed.
Whether the economy is up or down. So, that's like you can't beat that.
So you said, I'm going to go back a little bit because I'm thinking as the average person who's looking to invest in real estate, if we're not using Trulia, we're not using Zillow, and we haven't built a real estate Rolodex.
Yeah.
Where are we going? Are we going to auctions to find properties? Or are we going to like the Section 8? Or like, where would I go if I was just trying to start?
Yeah, so if you're just trying to start, you go get educated first. But, they call it driving for dollars. Mm. So first and foremost, you want to identify a neighborhood that you think is about to pop off next. And so I don't care what city you're in, you should be able to take me on a helicopter ride of that city and actually show me where the lines are, where things are on the fringes, where things are about to pop off. You should be able to tell me that. Because when you're looking at Trulia and Zillow, you're looking from a property level, but we need to see how your city is trending. Where are people moving to, right? So as rents increase in major urban centers, people are leaving and they're going somewhere. And so you need to be able to tell me in your market, where are people going? So Mesa, Arizona was one of the hottest rental markets in the country. And you know where Mesa, Arizona is?
No.
It's 15 minutes outside of Phoenix. So Phoenix was getting gentrified and people were deciding, where do I go that still can get me to work? And Mesa happened to be it. So you need to find that smaller secondary market that is around it. So once you've identified a neighborhood, now you want to start driving for dollars and you want to start looking for where there's trends, where you're starting to see the 10 to 15 signs of gentrification, and you want to target your search specifically there. Then comes personal branding. You have to let people know that this is actually what you're looking for. And you need to be very clear in your language. I'm looking for a triplex in the 70802 for a price range of $250,000. And you need to start communicating that to not only agents, but to everybody around you so that when things happen. So, for instance, somebody's parent transitions or their grandmother transitions and the children do not want to buy. No child of the four wants to buy the house from their siblings. Right. Everybody wants to cash out. And before it hits the market, guess who they reach out to? You, because you communicated what you were looking for. Hey, well, my friend is looking for a multifamily now. So this is the key, is to build those relationships and let other people know what you're actually looking for. It's not a website. It's been relationships for me. And then driving for dollars means also skip tracing. So driving for dollars, you're driving through neighborhoods and you're looking for properties that are boarded up. You're looking for properties that have overgrown grass. You're looking for properties with 20 newspapers in the front yard. And you take down the address and you do what they call skip trace. And skip tracing means going online and actually identifying the owner through the assessor's website or through whitepages.com, right? So you skip trace them, you call them, you text them, you mail them, right? And you ask them if they're what they're doing, what their intentions are for that property. So the home that I live in, my single family that I live in now, I didn't get a single family until I had 20 doors, right? So, but my home that I live in now, I skip traced the owner. I wanted that property. I saw it sitting there vacant. And when I first found her, she said that, oh yeah, I plan to move on there and finish the work that's in there, et cetera, because it was down to the studs already. And it took me a year and a half to get that property. But I'm the only one that knew that she was in a in-between space about what she was going to do with the property, because I was the only one who did the research. So I got that property at a discount. I got it for, I think, 140, put in 60, finished it out really nice. And it's worth, it actually is getting appraised this week. And I think it's going to appraise at $300,000.
So
for, well done.
For people, let's just bring it back. Multifamily, the benefit of having a multifamily is that you have cash flow. As opposed to just most people, when they think of buying a home, they're just buying a single family home.
Yeah.
And as you said, the problem with that is that if you lose your job, it's not really, that's when people say, like, is a home an asset or a liability?
Oh, yeah.
And it's like a single family, technically, you can kind of say it could be a liability. So,
not technically, it actually is.
Whereas a multifamily home, you got somebody living, you know, below you, or above you. Now you actually collect two forms of rent. So it's actually positive cash flow. So that's the benefit of for anybody that's wondering, like, why we're talking about multifamily. That's the benefit of multifamily homes. Now, one of the knocks for multifamily homes is that people don't want to live with other people. They don't want to live in the same house that somebody is above them or somebody is below them. What would you say to them for that?
You're renting right now. You got somebody living above you or next to you right now.
If you're in a building.
Yeah, yeah. And you likely are.
but like, as far as like buying a home, if they're like, if I'm going to buy a home, I want a home. I don't want to live and have to deal with neighbors.
But you're going to have to deal with a mortgage.
Yeah.
You either deal with neighbors or you deal with a mortgage. And FHA is only a one-year living requirement, right? So a lot of people, the single family dream has been pushed to folks, but the American dream is just rock people to sleep. It's actually the American nightmare. Everything they tell you to do in the American dream is to rock you to sleep. Everything they tell you to do, go to college. Who gets paid off that student loan interest? The government. They say, go get a high paying job. Who gets paid, takes their money off the top? The government. Then they say, go get a single family home. Who do you have to pay property taxes to? The government. Everything they told you to do in the American dream was so that they could get paid, right? So HGTV will have you fooled in thinking that once you get the keys, you are a homeowner. That's a lie. You're a home buyer. You bought a home. You're not a homeowner because you only put 3.5% down. The bank owns the other 96.5%, right? And so we have to be very careful with our language. What happens is a lot of people buy single family homes and like, oh, look at me. I'm grown now. I ain't renting no more. That's a lie. You still are renting. You're not renting from a landlord. You just rented the bank's money. What is the bank's money rented called? It's called interest. You're renting money. You're not renting a space. You're renting money. Right. And so on a $300,000 loan at 4% with only 3.5% down, you're about to pay $208,000 in interest. So people look at a single family home, say, oh, that home's only $300,000. No, that home is going to cost you $508,000. Not only are you buying yourself a home, you're buying your lender a home at the same time. And if you look at the mortgage payment, like, what bank would you go to where you put in $2,000 into the account and you only get credited $600? Would you bank with a bank like that? No. That's what a mortgage payment is. Your first mortgage payment or FHA loan at 3.5% down is 70% interest. So you put in $2,000 and the interest was $1,400. That's a terrible transaction. So when we look at that, a single family home is a dangerous way to try to begin your real estate journey, because if you're not careful, this is what's sick. If you're not careful, when you add in the interest, the private mortgage insurance, the property taxes, the homeowner's insurance, and the maintenance of that property, a single family home buyer can actually have more money going out of their pocket due to housing than someone who is renting the same square footage across the street. Now, people say, well, Julian, my house appreciated. The appreciation only is covering the interest that you were going to pay to the bank. You're not really up. It's only covering the interest. And so we have to be very careful about calling a single family home an asset when it really isn't. And if you haven't leveraged it, if your money is stuck, even if it has appreciated and your money's stuck in the walls, then it's just sitting there doing nothing until you actually liquidate. And liquidating means selling. And once you sell, you have no place to live. So this is very key. Now, there's four financial benefits of multifamily real estate. I've talked to you about cash on cash return. And so I have a duplex in New Orleans that I spent. The price is $300,000. So let me just break down over the next 30 years how much that property is going to pay me. It does not look like a $1 million home, but it actually is when you actually look at the numbers. So over the next 30 years, that property is going to pay me $638,000 in cash flow. That's after principal, interest, taxes, insurance, CapEx, repairs, urban vacancy rate. That's money in my pocket over the next 30 years. Then the tax savings on that property, money that I do not pay the government, will be $278,000. I'm getting $278,000 in tax savings on a $300,000 home.
Because of the location of the property?
No, because I get to depreciate that property over 27.5 years and all the expenses related to that property. Right. So I'm actually reducing my tax liability by $278,000 over 30 years. Then the principal pay down. Who's paying the principal? I'm not. The tenants are. So that's $225,000. And then if this property appreciates by 1% every year for the next 30 years, that's an additional $104,000. So you add all that up, that's $1.2 million. So this is a $1 million property. And I still have the property, which is also now, I still have $300,000 of equity that's in the property. So it's actually 1.5. So this is simply off of a $300,000 duplex. And when you see that, then it becomes a no-brainer. See, a lot of people are hesitant to invest in multifamily real estate, especially people who are getting this fast money through stock options and stock market investing, et cetera. It's great. And we need the fast money and the slow money. But multifamily real estate is actually a 25% return. It's just not a cash on cash return. If I have a 12% cash on cash return, and then I add in those other benefits of the principal pay down, the tax savings, and the appreciation, my actual annual rate of return is around 25%. Elon Musk, annual rate of return since he sold, since he exited PayPal and to what he has today, his annual rate of return has been 44.44%. So if I'm able to get 25% return, I think I'm doing pretty good. And a lot of people, you know, the stock market, S&P 500, guess what the rate of return is on the S&P 500 over the past 20 years?
Everybody, 12% annually, something like
that. January 1st, 2000 to December 31st, 2020, the annual rate of return on the S&P 500 was 4.77%. You can go run the numbers, right? And there's a lot more volatility in that as well. Mm-hmm. This is consistent. My daughter will be able to inherit these. If I stop right now, just where my portfolio is, my private portfolio right now, at the age of 36, my daughter will have $25,000 in passive income for the rest of her life. If I stop now, mm-hmm. right? Because of multifamily real estate investing. So so what I've done is I played the long-term game first. So a lot of people, you know, they try the get rich quick schemes, but if they would have played the long-term game a long time ago, they'd be a lot further along. So I've actually secured the long-term game first, and then what that does is it frees me up to take greater risk in other avenues and other forms of investment that have more volatility. So that's been the way I played the game.
You said your private portfolio. I'm just in my head, I'm thinking, in your private portfolio, are you still buying the properties through an LLC, or how does that work? Is it in your
personal? at this stage, so you can only have 10 mortgages as an individual.
Right.
So yeah, all of my purchases now are in my business name or in the LLC. So there's the parent LLC, which is a holding company, and then each property has its own individual LLC, mm-hmm. and that's how I operate now.
Yeah, makes it easier.
Yeah, it makes it easier. Everything's cleaner. It keeps the books clean.
So what about mindset? Because I feel like, you know, we talked about like finance, and that's one hurdle that stops people.
Yeah.
That's why I wanted to open up with financing, but it's not the only hurdle. I think a lot of times people just don't believe that they can buy a home, or they just, you know, it's, especially if you've been renting your whole life and you live in a city like New York or Los Angeles, it's a far-fetched idea. And I think the mindset is kind of stops people as well.
That's the reason my students succeed, is because we focus on the mindset, right? There's the physical real estate, and then there's the mental real estate. And the fact that people are lacking intellectual property is the reason that they don't have physical property. They're missing the information up here. This is why they don't are able to manifest it out here. So one of the biggest mindset shifts is, and you saw me say this at InvestFest, is that people have to recognize that if you're renting right now, you're homeless.
Okay.
If you're renting right now, and I'm not saying it jokingly, I'm kind of saying it jokingly, and I'm kind of serious, because technically you are homeless. You literally do not have a home. You are not on the title. You are not on the deed. And when you look at an actual homeless person.
Technically homeless.
Yeah.
Homeless.
Not homeless like you're on the street.
Correct.
But you just don't have a home.
You're minus a home.
Homeless.
Yes. So when we look at the actual homeless person who's on the street, right, they probably dealt with childhood abuse. They probably dealing with mental illness. They have no money, no friends, no family, no shelter, no food, no job, none of that, right? All they have is the clothes on their backs. And here, all of us are, we have roof over our head. We got the internet, $1,000 computer, $1,000 phone, long old resumes, all this education, people who love us, etc. How is it that that person who's sleeping on the bus bench owns as many properties as you do? With all the advantages that you have, how is that possible, right? And so when people recognize that they're actually homeless and they start to change their subconscious mind, because we say, what do people say? Oh, this is my apartment. You know, you dating somebody, say, come over to my apartment. That is not your apartment. And but we are subconsciously lying to ourselves when we call it my apartment or my house when it's actually not. And so what I actually encourage people to do when they join my program, I literally tell them, start going and getting boxes. Start packing up.
Earners, listen up. There's a new site that's building the best real estate investing experience ever. It's called Fundrise. It's the first online investment platform designed to give every person the opportunity to own a portfolio of high-quality real estate affordably, thanks to their cutting-edge low-cost model. That's right. Fundrise is revolutionizing the investment world by delivering unparalleled transparency and real-time reporting that lets you see how the development of specific properties impact your overall portfolio. The platform's innovations power an investor-first model by eliminating the bloated costs of middlemen that have traditionally weighed down real estate investing, saving investors time and money. Every Fundrise portfolio can be allocated according to the types of real estate you personally prefer, drawing on the platform's many active properties, over 150, handpicked by their in-house team of pros, and many more added all the time. When you add Fundrise Real Estate to your investing strategy, you're unlocking a deeper sort of diversification than anything available through your run-of-the-mill public stocks and bonds. And one of the secrets that many of the country's wealthiest investors understand is that when you diversify, your portfolio is not just resilient, it's actually positioned to earn more overall. But now, no matter what kind of investor you are, Fundrise makes it simple to build a more perfect portfolio. But don't just take my word. See for yourself. Check out why Fundrise has grabbed the attention of the financial world, earning it a place on Forbes' list of most innovative companies year after year, and the title Best Real Estate Investment Platform in 2019 by the FinTech Breakthrough Awards. And earners, they got a special offer going on right now. Visit fundrise.com/leisure. That's FUNDRISE.com/leisure to have your first 3 months of fees waived. Again, that's fundrise.com/leisure. Don't wait. Don't hesitate. Head over there now.
Right, I need you to start packing up. Go get boxes. Because when I travel, and I know you all been on the road, right? Do you start taking stuff out of your suitcase and hanging it all up and putting it in the drawers? No, you live out of your suitcase because you know that that place, that hotel is not yours, right? So why do we unpack and get comfortable in places that actually do not belong to us?
That's like big business?
Yeah.
So when we interviewed him, he was saying that he moved to Miami. And he never got a TV. I don't think he got a couch. He just had a bed. And he promised his wife and his child that the reason why he wasn't going to furnish the place because he was only going to be there for a temporary time. So he didn't want to get comfortable.
Why get comfortable in a place that's not mine? People over here painting walls. You buying furniture for certain nooks in somebody else's house. You putting up bookshelves. You making it look nice. Everybody in the neighborhood thinks you own it and you don't. So go start packing your boxes. Literally, people have closed in less than 90 days once they got their mind right. Like, imagine being enslaved in Maryland, right? Maryland, right below the Mason-Dixon line. And now you've been enslaved for 40 years, and now you're on your deathbed, and somebody tells you that the Mason-Dixon line is right there by the horizon, by that tall tree. The Mason-Dixon line was right there the whole time, but you didn't know it. You just weren't aware of it. Once you realize that the Mason-Dixon line is actually that close, you run for it. And so the ability to acquire multifamily real estate, people think you need to have a real estate license. People think that you need to have bought a single family home first. People have all these myths about what it takes to get in the game. People think that you need to have a ton of money saved. Literally, people have not gone to go get pre-approved. You won't believe how many people have not even gone to go get pre-approved. And the reason they haven't gone to get pre-approved is because their own perception of how they're showing up in the world. You know, everybody around us perceives us in this high way, like your significant other, your friends or family see you in your best light, but we look at ourselves in the lowest way sometimes. And so what I tell people is go get pre-approved. I don't care how you see your financial situation right now. Let's see how the bank sees your financial situation. and you'll be surprised. You thought that you could only get pre-approved for $300,000, which is not enough to buy multifamily in your market. But when you actually went to the lender and showed them what you had, they approved you for $500,000. You could have been in the game a long time ago, but you were afraid to go get pre-approved. You were afraid to open up your financial house and let somebody in and come see. And you realize that it's not as bad as you think, because this is a physical, tangible asset, real estate. Banks are more willing to lend against that than your business idea that you have your 10-page business plan on.
Yep.
So go get pre-approved. It costs you nothing to go get pre-approved. You're going to ask for your W-2s, some pay stubs, your tax returns, your bank statements. Go, literally, go to the bank that you have your checking or savings account at and start there. I don't care what your credit is. All we want to do is see what number they come back to you with. And if that number is too low to buy multifamily real estate in your market, then let's fix the things. If it's your credit, then let's work on your credit. If it's your savings, let's work on your savings. If it's your income that they say is too low, then let's work on your income. But let's be in the know. Let's start from that awareness. But some people have been able to get pre-approved for more than they needed, but they have been afraid. Because this whole, we got this wave of people who are just focused on perfect credit scores right now.
Yeah.
The name of the purpose of credit is to be leveraged and to you be used. Some people have better credit scores than me, but have no assets, right? So we're not just trying to create perfect credit scores. We're trying to build wealth, and not just generational wealth. We're trying to create regenerational wealth, and regenerational wealth is wealth that transcends multiple generations. Generational wealth gets passed down one generation. We're seeking to create regenerational wealth and enter into what I call the asset class, right? There's only four classes of people. There's lower class, middle class, upper class, and asset class. And only one of those classes of people is free. It's the asset class. This is the top line on your sweatshirts. It's the asset class. So the asset class, people have passive income that covers their cost of living. Even if I'm in the upper class and I have a good paying job like my mom did, I'm still not free. I'm actually more free than some Fortune 500 CEOs right now, even though I don't make the money that they make. Because I own my time. Because
yeah.
I have assets that cover my entire cost of living and more. So this is what the goal is. And so for me, the multifamily movement is not just about multifamily real estate. That's what I realized recently. It's about multiple families coming together to create regenerational wealth and enter the asset class. And the first asset that we're buying together is multifamily real estate. But beyond that, I expect to be in these people's lives for the rest of their lives as we continue to create regenerational wealth together.
Yeah, I'm glad you broke down the asset class, because I wanted to talk to you about the difference between being in poverty and being poor. I know that's something that you highlight.
Oh my goodness.
And I got a follow-up after that, but I want you to start
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. So I wrote Rich and Righteous, The Spiritual Secrets of Manifesting More Money and Mastering Your Mind. And in there, I talk about the difference between being poor and being in poverty.
I just want you to know your book is up there.
Oh, shout out. I appreciate it. I didn't even notice that.
You know,
I appreciate
by
that.
By the way.
Of course, of course, of course. I mean, it's really about moving our people from poverty consciousness to wealth consciousness, because I realize that if we give all these financial strategies to people with a poverty consciousness, that none of them will take root. And so we have to be very careful and make sure that the soil is set first. And that's where the mind comes in. So if I'm born into poverty, poverty is just an external condition. It is not who I am. But what happens is when a black boy or black girl is born into poverty, they look around them and they base their identity based on what they see. And they say, I am poor, because they see poverty. But that's not the truth of your identity. The truth is that you are abundant, and abundance is your birthright. And the reason that I think we as a collective, have been, most of us have been born into those conditions, is actually to prove how rich we are. We were born into poverty to prove how rich we are. If I'm Paris Hilton, right, and I'm born into wealth, I can't prove how rich I am, because I already had it. It was already handed to me. But if I'm born into poverty, I actually can demonstrate that I am abundant regardless of my external condition. And so this is a mindset. So never say I am poor, right? I am are the two most powerful words in the English language, okay? Never say I am poor. You can say I was born into poverty, but that is not who I am. And we've seen all these albums that you see here. People have demonstrated that my external condition does not define me. And we've seen people create abundance out of nothing. Jay-Z said, put me anywhere on God's green earth, I'll trip my worth. That means that regardless of what I have in my pocket and what's around me, I know that the true wealth is actually inside of me. And so when we start there in the mindset, I believe that it's a more fertile soil for us to actually implant these wealth seeds and these strategies, and that they'll take root and they'll grow from there.
Yeah.
So how'd you get into the education aspect of it? Because I want to talk about the multifamily movement.
Yeah.
What, all right, you're an investor, you realize, you know, you can make money, change your family. What prompted you to actually building a community?
Yeah, so I'm a real estate investor first, then a real estate educator, then a real estate developer. And I was speaking at colleges and companies from 2009 when I quit my job up until like 2019. It was about a 10-year run. And I was taking the money that I was making from speaking and I was pouring it into real estate. And I kept getting more questions about real estate than I would get about anything else. And so I said, let me start teaching people how to do this. And so my first student, Chris Kazirol, he actually handled marketing for Queen of Fua or whatnot. And he closed on a fourplex near USC using NACA. He closed on a fourplex near USC. And that was my first success story outside of myself. And from there, I just started teaching it to more and more people. And I just knew that people needed this information and this education. And while multifamily real estate investing, it looks similar to single family purchasing on the surface, there's just so many more nuances that you need to know to make sure that you buy right. And so so I started the multifamily movement. It was July of 2019. And today we've helped 62 people, actually, yeah, somebody just closed yesterday, on multifamily real estate all across the country. And the thing about the multifamily movement that's different is that I realize that, and I think you all say this, information's on us, the execution's on you. I realize that I'm not actually selling them information. What I'm giving them is an accountability structure and a system to make sure that they implement the information. And so we have market meetups, like you talk about with the EYL community. We have market meetups where you're actually connecting with other members. You have a buddy in the program. We have our weekly coaching calls. It's all about the accountability and the structure to make sure that you implement the information. We know better, but we just don't always do better. We got books on our shelves that we intended to read to change some aspect of our lives. The information is there. You wanted to lose weight last year. There's free videos on YouTube, HIIT trainings on YouTube. There's free recipes on Google. The information was there, but there was still something blocking you from actually getting to the finish line. And so I realized that, because only 7% of people complete online courses when left up to their own devices. And so that's what our commitment is, and that's what I'm trying to push on all of us, because we are teaching liberation arts education. What was shoved down our throat was liberal arts education. Liberal arts education will cost you. I don't need to know anything about Shakespeare. I don't care about Shakespeare, right? But liberation arts education will free you. And what we have right now, what's happening, and you are all spearheading this movement, is liberation arts education. When people know these things, they can get free, right? But it's not just about the information. It's about how do we make sure that they implement the information, because they implement one of Ian's strategies, one of Trapper's strategies, one of your strategies, one of my strategies, one of Matt's strategies. When they implement these things, we know that they're not only their lives, but their family's lives will be changed forever.
So, and you know, it's one of these things that's interesting, because I always said, like, you know, real estate not something that they teach in college, but they actually starting teaching in college. I think it's actually because there's so many online education, but like NYU has a real estate program, but NYU costs $60,000 a year.
Fact.
So it's like, hey, I'm not really even sure what they're teaching in their real estate program, but you're paying $60,000 a year, and that's the beauty of online education, where it's like, directly, this is what I want to know. Yeah. I don't have to go through everything else that comes with that.
Correct.
Like, you know, because you just can't take real estate. You got to take math and science and you know, all the other stuff. Even in college, you still got to take all the other stuff and be there for 4 years, where it's like, all right, you can actually implement this in 6 months, a year, you know, be in a position to actually execute.
Yeah.
And it's like mentorship.
Yeah.
In a sense, right? Where you're like, you're part of a community. You have, you know, meetings and online Zoom calls, stuff like that. You know, people always ask, like, you know, can I get mentored? Well, that's kind of like the online communities have turned into, like, the mentorship.
Exactly, 100%. Like, I don't have the capacity to do one-on-one. I have too many people to free, right? But if I can create a community of people who are supporting each other on this singular journey, which is to acquire multifamily real estate, then I know that you're going to get to your ultimate destination and get free. Harriet Tubman, she didn't take people one at a time. She made 19 trips below the Mason-Dixon line, and she took cohorts of people. That's how she freed 300 people. That's why my first focus is 300 people. She took cohorts of people. She didn't have time to take one person at a time, right? You had to take groups of people. And so that's what we're able to create. And I think the pandemic actually pushed us online in that way. And And when I look at InvestFest, when I look at you all traveling to different cities, we're also making sure that the online is complemented with the offline experience so that people can build real relationships, not just profile pictures, but real relationships, because we know that collaboration over competition is where it's at.
Yeah, I was thinking inside of the community, because what we talk about a lot, we hear group economics.
Yeah.
If I didn't have the funding or if I didn't have the finance, are you seeing people working together to say, look, I have this, I have that, let's come together to get this property inside of it?
Yeah. So half the members of the Buyback Baton Rouge Fund, there's about 461 of us who invested. They all came from the multifamily movement. So not only are they working on getting their first property, but any other additional capital that they had, they decided to invest in a larger fund where we're developing over 100 units out in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. So, and that comes from the trust of the community, and that comes from working together. That what that allows us to do is buy bigger properties at a discount. It's like, okay, we're going to put our money together and we're going to go to Costco, right? But we're not buying ketchup now. We're buying real estate at a discount. So that's the power of group economics. Like, we pay lip service to it, but, you know, myself and Anthony Kimball, Chris, we know people have executed the crowdfunding methodology, and it's really powerful when done right because everybody can participate at the level that they feel comfortable. Like, everybody doesn't need a $30,000 down payment, right? People can say, I'm putting in $1,000 and it's still going to multiply at the same rate. It's just not as much money in. So that's the power of the crowdfunding methodology.
So I know you and MG, shout out to our partner, MG the Mortgage Guy. Yes. MG the Mortgage Guy has what I call the encyclopedia for real estate with his Home Buyer Blueprint 1 and 2, where literally like everything you need to know about buying a home and refinancing a home and 203K loans, all of that. It's really like an encyclopedia. And he put together a great body of work for the volume 1 and the volume 2. And then we talked about your multifamily movement. So you guys actually combined forces.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And you put together a Black Friday deal, which was wildly popular, wildly successful. So you're going to have that same offer for EYL for anybody that's interested. And the website is www.get4321.com. We'll put the link in the description of this video and audio, and then also on the alumni tab also. So once again, that is actually a combination of MG the Mortgage Guys volume 1, volume 2, Home Buyer's Blueprint, and the multifamily movement community, which, as he said, includes, you know, weekly calls and, you know, all of the things that you need to get up and running to actually have the confidence, the knowledge, the information, and the support to actually, you know, not just purchase one home, but, you know, become a real estate mogul.
Yeah.
Why not?
This is their purple tape.
Yeah. So the whole combined, I believe it's a 77% off of the total value. So it's a 77% off of the total value. And literally, honestly, because I'm familiar with both of the situations, there's nothing else that you really need in real estate. Like, especially if you doing the multifamily home, this is literally like the equivalent of going to college.
There's like, no joke. I mean, there's no cap on that. Like, I really went through Matt's course, wrote the assessments for it, watched every video. It was incredible. Mm-hmm. Then I got to watch you guys, and I said, oh, this is it. Yeah. This is the game.
Yeah.
This is the game.
Like, 100%.
That's a tremendous disservice if you're not involved in it. So congratulations on that. It's incredible.
Appreciate that. So Matt and I, we've been running parallel paths for quite some time. He's helped about, he's financed about half of the multifamily movement members through the Garland Group. And we said, we just have to formalize this partnership. And so we are committed to actually taking another 300 people to the finish line this year in terms of multifamily real estate. And so this is what the collaboration has come to. Get4321 is how you can get 10 doors in 4 years using FHA several times and running the plays that we tell you to run. If you follow the blueprint, you can't go wrong. And so, we're excited about it. People are already getting wins inside of the program. So we want to take as many people, because it's not just about one property. One property should get you to rent mortgage freedom, but we're trying to get you to full freedom, and you're going to need multiple doors in order to get there.
Yeah. And like I said, real live testimony, Matt personally told me, he was like, these people in Julian's program, man, they flooded me. But like I said, that's a good thing, because that means that they're actually purchasing homes. That's so if you want to take that next step and really, you know, get your freedom, highly, highly suggest checking it out. And like I said, you know, special offer for all the earners, anybody that's interested, anybody listening to this, get4321.com. Appreciate that, brother. Before you leave, I got a few more questions. one in particular. So we had another gentleman on the podcast that, mm-hmm. you know, people may be familiar with, Grant Cardone. Mm-hmm. And he has an interesting philosophy where his thing is rent where you live and invest in real estate. But where you live, rent that. Mm-hmm. How do you feel about that?
Man, I've thought about that, and I don't agree. Mm-hmm. I don't agree, and that's okay. Grant has a different perspective on real estate and money. He's able to write off his lifestyle. Grant is an LLC. Not everybody is operating as an LLC, so he's able to expense everything that he does. So if he goes and stays at a $5,000 a night condo in Miami, he's able to write that off. The average person isn't set up structurally or doesn't have the accounting team to ensure that that all gets written off. And so be careful, because these platitudes that people put out, if you don't know the back end in terms of how to actually execute it, it may not work for you.
It won't look the same.
Yeah, it ain't gonna look the same. What I do know is that for multifamily real estate, if you are literally able to get rid of your housing expense for the rest of your life, it'll guarantee that you and your family are millionaires, right? That's simple and plain. $1,000 a month, right? If you're able to save $1,000 a month and you were able to invest that at just 6% annually for the next 30 years, that's $1,015,590. If we just did this one thing. I'm not asking you to pick the right crypto. I'm not asking you to go find the right NFT. I'm not even asking you to find the next company that's gonna break through in stocks. Just literally get rid of your housing expense, and that will ensure that your family become a millionaire. So that's been the focus. That's been my lane in this whole revolution. And I know that once people have that particular thing established, then it frees them up to take advantage of all the other opportunities that are available.
Yeah, when you were speaking about the property earlier, when you did the math and how it equated to 1.5.
Yeah.
I'm thinking to myself, is this the property he's talking about? How you had $1 million in real estate by starting with 10,000? Is the same situation? Okay, got you.
Same situation. It just calculate. You have to run it. It's knowing the numbers.
Yeah.
It's knowing the numbers. And when you see that number, those numbers play out like that, it's just like, everything I get, I'm dumping into it. Because this is an asset that is passive also. It's not like I created active business. Perhaps my daughter doesn't want to take over this kind of business that I created over here. Perhaps she's not interested in that. But this can always be managed by a property manager that takes 6 to 10% of the rents forever.
Yeah, it's extremely important, especially the gentrification, because it's like so many different places you see. Like we was in LA, shout out to my boy Stick Watts. He took us to Watts. And I think it was the Jordan Down projects, like Grape Street. And I was looking and I'm like, this doesn't really look like how it looked before. You can still see that there's projects, but there's also townhomes that's being built. So what I found out is that they're actually in the transition, I believe, of tearing down the projects and turning them into townhomes. And the townhomes actually look really nice. They look like state-of-the-art.
Yeah.
Like, they're like really dope. So he was telling me like, yeah, you know, all of these are new, like within the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So I say that to say, same story, no matter whether you're in New York.
That's the best part of that story.
What?
About who landed on the helicopter.
Huh?
He said, remember he was like,
Trump, right? Trump, yeah.
Landed his helicopter right in the middle of the grounds, like.
No, but no, that was where they built the strip mall.
Strip mall is right down the street.
The strip mall is where he landed the helicopter. Yeah. So that was another thing. So like, yeah, I guess there was like just vacant land. And so Trump, he said he came, he landed the helicopter. He was like, yeah, it's pretty messed up, man. he was like, all right, what y'all need? Da-da-da, and then he left. So long story short, I guess they got some government funds. So now they got a strip mall. Yeah. They got luxury townhomes that's being built. And this is right next to it. Jordan, for perspective, Jordan, if you heard of like Great Street, I'm pretty sure you heard of it, pretty famous. Minister Society. Mm-hmm. That's where Minister Society was filmed. Mm-hmm. So
White Man Can't Jump at a scene over.
It's one of these things where gentrification always happens. It always happens.
Yeah. You just got to be, you got to have the vision to see it. You know what I'm saying? Like, we see these things. Like,
I said,
like people, most people say, oh, there's a new Starbucks. Oh, there's 5 luxury car dealerships. Wait, Chipotle's here. Wait, Kmart's gone.
Yeah.
They put a golf shopping center. Like, yeah, these are all the signs that there's money. Tesla's now in your neighborhood.
Right.
Sound familiar?
But let me explain something really quickly. So, what we've been calling gentrification is actually colonization. Mm. So, gentrification is actually a good thing. It is actually the upliftment of our communities. If you look at the dictionary definition, it's actually the upliftment of community. So in Brooklyn, there is a block known as the greenest block in Brooklyn, right? These are all black owners. And because they decided to plant gardens in the front.
Where's that at?
I think on Macon Street in Brooklyn, in Bed-Stuy.
Okay.
So because they all decided to plant gardens, they collectively came together. We're going to plant gardens. And we're going to all do the facades of our homes. Guess what? They all force appreciation. Mm. Their equity all went up. But it's a block of all black owners. So they gentrified their own block. what we've been calling gentrification is actually colonization. And colonization is when outsiders come in and try to displace the natives of that neighborhood intentionally. So colonization is, it has a tinge to it, right? It has a negative history to it, but that's actually what has been occurring. When you have people come into the Shaw in DC and you have people complaining about the music that's been played in the Shaw for 30 years, then that's colonization that is seeking to happen, because you're trying to displace the culture that is there. So we need to call a spade a spade. If it's colonization, it's colonization, but gentrification is actually upliftment. I want the hood to look better. Yeah. I don't want the hood to be the hood forever. I want everybody to have higher quality standard of living. And yes, there are some costs associated with that. The rents might actually have to increase for you to live in a decent way. And so we all have to step our game up. But gentrification is not the negative thing. It's the colonization. And we just haven't been calling it so.
Gentrify your hood before those people do it. Claim eminent domain and have your people move in.
Yeah, facts.
That's a fact.
That's kind of what Nipsey was doing.
Yep, it was.
Tune with what he was doing.
Yeah. Well, it's been a pleasure, my brother. Appreciate How can you. The people follow you, social media handles, anything else that you want to leave before we head out?
Yeah, so rentfree.com. Rentfree.com. If you want to learn this game, you can go to rentfree.com. I'll show you how to finance, find, and finalize multifamily real estate deals so that you can close on your first property within the next year.
There you have. What's your social media handle?
It's Julian Gordon, J-U-L-L-I-E-N, Gordon, G-O-R-D-O-N.
Yes, and don't forget, get4321.com. That is the special offer that him and our brother MG, the mortgage guy,
together. I call him the mortgage guy.
everything that you need to know to get up and running and get into this real estate game and really start to make some money. So that's a special offer, 77% off the total value of the package, strictly on that website, only on that website. So yeah, thank you for that. Appreciate it.
Appreciate
and thank you guys for rocking with you. Anything you want to say?
Liberation Arts. Don't forget that. Yeah, shout out to everybody on UIL University. Shout out to the merch team. Shout out to everybody on Patreon. This is one of those. I appreciate you for coming, my brother. Long overdue.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, for sure. Thank you guys for rocking with us. We'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.
My graduates from my school being Forbes. Bag drop. F*** a mic drop. Bag drop.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona Tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.